Across the galaxy, the Clone Wars spread.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network's Look Back at the Clone Wars micro-series.
Against this threat, upon the Jedi Knights falls the duty to lead the newly formed Army of the Republic.
While the full-length Clone Wars show is on summer hiatus, come back to RepublicForces.com this summer and join Dan, Jen, Jerry, Barrett, and Nathan as they look back at all 25 episodes of the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars series that aired from 2005 through 2008.
You have been selected for this task because you are the best, the elite. You all know what to do.
In these matters, trust your insight, we do. May the Force be with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network and our continuing coverage of the Tartakovsky micro-series. Joining me all summer long is Barrett.
Hello, everybody. It's Barrett, Master Collect 'em All from the forums.
Your Swan Holocron Enhancer.
And we be Illum. Dun, 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 dun.
What?
Did you really just reference the monks and Run DMC all in one?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Jen?
I always got to follow up these awesome intros. I got nothing, so hi.
Jerry?
Hey, guys, this is Jerry, Bounty on the forums. Oh, no, I'm not anymore. I'm Jerry on the forums. But you can hear me on Star Wars Action News with my vintage viewpoint, Marvelicious Toys with timely reviews, and I am currently on Now Play and reviewing the Transformers movie.
And Nathan.
Hey, folks. Nathan P. Butler here, author of Wars, The Battle of Phobos Preludes, Volume 1, or at least one of the three that should be available now. For more information on that and other projects, see NathanPButler.com. Yes, I've got the domain name these days.
And now, before we get into our discussion, a brief message from Now Playing.
You got the touch. You got the power.
Now Playing's got The Touch.
I would have waited an eternity for this.
In anticipation of the upcoming movie release of Transformers Dark of the Moon, head to NowPlayingPodcast.com as Arnie, Stuart, and Jerry watch and review all films in the Transformers series, including the 1986 original animated feature.
One shall stand, one shall fall.
A new review will be released each week at NowPlayingPodcast.com, culminating with Steven Spielberg and Michael Bay's Dark of the Moon.
Your friends will love it. Sure, it's a lot of fun.
And while at NowPlayingPodcast.com, check our archive section for other movie series reviews, including X-Men, Scream, Terminator, and more.
Like us, there's more to them than meets the eye.
Now Playing Podcast. More than meets the ear?
We are here. We are waiting. You got the motion.
You know that when things get too tough, you got the touch. All right. And we are going to be talking about the next three episodes in the Tartakovsky micro series of the Clone Wars. One of the favorite trilogies or story arcs from this, because it gave Star Wars fans a new sex symbol to lust after. After 25 years of Slave Leia, we get Snow Bunny Padme, and I'm sure we'll get to a nice discussion about that.
Wait. That's become a sex symbol? I missed something somewhere.
Really? You haven't seen
this? I mean, I've heard the term.
Seen the maquettes?
I haven't seen the maquettes. I can't see how that's a sex symbol, but...
Dude.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
But that's not how this story arc begins. It actually begins with the completion of the training of Bear Sophie. That can't be right, can it, Nathan?
No, it can't. But yes, it can. What they basically said after the fact, because of other stories in which she is still a Padawan or still going through the transition, is that essentially this is one of the last steps in her actual training. But then your Jedi trials can take a lot of different forms. And usually it's like a trial by fire. It's something you go through, as opposed to being like, okay, round one, here's this. Round two, here's this. It's just a life experience that you go through, which for her happens later in the Clone Wars, leading up to her eventual mission in the MedStar books and such. So It's kind of interesting. It's the end of her training, and yet it's not, which makes a lot of people question how this is going to fit in relation to the Brain Invaders, you know, landing at Point Rain and such episodes out of season two. They haven't actually pinned that down yet.
That's the questions I want to have, Nathan. That's what I want to ask you, because I noticed that this is supposed to be the end, like you said, of Barriss Offee's training, where she's building her lightsaber. I did notice that this lightsaber is not the same lightsaber she has at Landing at Point Rain. It's different. This lightsaber that she's building here is more cylindrical, and the one that she has at Landing at Point Rain kind of has a point at the end of it. So I was wondering about that, if we could tell when this happened concerning the lightsabers. Was she building a new lightsaber after Landing at Point Rain, or did she lose another lightsaber?
I don't know if they've ever really pinned down how that would work. They haven't quite figured out how they're going to fit all this stuff together at this point. I mean, everything's kind of in flux. They've said until the last scripts for the current series are actually written, then they'll start figuring out exactly how everything's going to wind up being pieced together. I will say, though, that just it already raises questions, because here we have an episode focusing on the end of her training, and yet, if you notice, C-3PO is still in his episode 2 coverings, not the golden episode 3 coverings that he gets later in this series. So however they work it, they're probably going to wind up having to fudge one thing or the other, either her status or C-3PO's coloration that we're supposed to be seeing at this point in time. Kind of like they've had to fudge the issue of what does Anakin's hair look like at the time of his knighting versus otherwise. I mean, it's all this really kind of petty little stuff, but they try to provide answers for it because they know somebody's going to wind up asking one way or the other. In this case, these are questions that have been asked, but not answered yet.
All right. So Barriss completes her lightsaber and her training, which doesn't necessarily mean she's a Jedi, apparently. So that's fine. But the Jedi temple that they're in, which is apparently where lightsaber crystals come from, or one of the places.
Lightsaber crystals can be found a lot of places. Ilum was just the more common place for them to go. But there's already been some level of, about, you know, whether or not we should take some elements of this episode when it comes to the lightsaber crystals at face value. Because you notice also when they're floating around, you've got purple ones floating around too. And that's supposed to be a unique thing for Mace Windu that he wound up going through a special process to get. So that's always been one of those things that just assumed to be, it's a cartoon. It's exaggerated. It's blah, blah, blah. You know, another one of those things, kind of like the effect of the seismic tank and super Mace Windu in our last episode we discussed.
But we find that this temple is under attack. It has been infiltrated by chameleon droids. And for those of you keeping score at home, and Barriss, we remember that there was actually a battle pack with a horribly articulated and posed Snow Bunny Padme and a couple of chameleon droids.
Yes. Now, I didn't pick up that pack, but I did pick up the single carded Padme, the un-cartoon, kind of like the they had a fur Padme. It was in the Clone Wars collection, but it was more of the realistic style Padme.
Right. And the one in the battle pack was realistic. She was just not very articulated and in an action pose.
Wait. Barriss, you don't have this battle pack? You're the one who calls for toys of everything, and you didn't seek these things out? They made two of them.
No, I did not. If you remember, I did a galactic purge around this time. So I wasn't picking up anything new. But now that I know it's there, it's out there, I'll probably end up picking that up.
Well, and sadly, you can probably get it cheaper now than you could have when it was a Target exclusive or wherever it was at.
Now, before we get too far into the Snow Bunny Padme stuff, though, going back to the first part of this with Luminara and Barriss, I did want to note that it's kind of cool one of the things they did with the voice actors here, because the voice actress for Luminara here is actually Cree Summer, or Cree Summers. I can't remember if it's plural or not, but Cree Summer, who played Princess Nisa back in the Ewoks cartoons. They brought someone back from the classic animation for this, which is nice because they based so much of it, like the look and the way they handled C-3PO's eyes and such, on the old Nelvana Star Wars cartoons, in that case droids. It's kind of cool to see them bring back a classic voice actors here.
All right, let me just see if I get this right. And don't interrupt me until I'm done, okay? Let's see if I get this. Okay, the crystal is the heart of the blade. The blade is the heart of the Jedi. The Jedi is the blade of the Force. And if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. Is that what she's teaching there? Because I was expecting Bear Sophie to say, wait, what? Because that was just the goofiest opening when she's creating that lightsaber. I was lost.
You know, the Jedi kind of have a thing for this type of thing. You know, fear leads to anger leads to hate, et cetera, et cetera. The Sith have their own version with their Sith code that essentially builds the same way. I think it's just one of those things where it's, you know, it's like any chant almost that you would have to learn for a lot of Eastern religions.
But Yoda's little pathway goes through a logical sequence. If you really listen to what Luminara is saying, it makes no sense.
That was fancy Jedi mumbo jumbo for put the shiny end into the bad guy.
I was waiting for Bears to say, is that going to be on the test?
Now, what I did like about this, and this has been shown, we kind of saw hints and snippets of it in comics and previous books, where Barriss and Luminar are so linked, they're so tight as a master and Padawan that their moves are actually in tandem. They either mimic each other or they work in concert with each other. They're kind of like a counterbalance or even a melody, whereas they're fighting in almost concert. It was really impressive for them to see them pull that off in this small, quick scale.
This is one of the scenes that actually got me more interested into the EU, because I had no idea who these characters were when I first saw this. And I started asking my husband about them, like, who are these people? These are neat. Like, these characters were just really cool. I love their character designs. I loved, like, the way that they were dressed completely kind of differently from everybody else. They just looked interesting. And I noticed, as you were saying, that they fought in this weird kind of tandem, very coordinated way. And I was really interested in them. And this actually got me starting to look into more EU stuff when I had never touched it before. So this actually had a big impact on me.
Now, I brought up the whole thing about Cree Summer doing the voice of Luminara, because I did think that was really cool. But at the same time, there was one thing voice-wise that bugged me, and it turns out that the reason it bugged me wasn't just a perception, it really was what happened. It sounded like Anthony Daniels, when we get into chapters, I guess, 15 and 16, it seemed like Anthony Daniels literally phoned in his performance as C-3PO, only for it to turn out that he literally phoned it in. He did it from across the world, from across the ocean, as I recall, and was not actually on site recording anything. And I think that the vocal quality for C-3PO in these next couple of episodes, chapters 15 and 16, really kind of suffers for that. I mean, he always sounds like he's speaking through a speaker because it's C-3PO. But he really sounds different this time around.
Oh, yeah, he definitely does. You can tell that there's something different. C-3PO always has kind of a tinny machine tone to his voice, but he doesn't have the same over-the-phone voice kind of like the clones do.
Yeah, it's like before Skype, whenever I used to do interviews on my podcasts, I would just call up the person and put them on speakerphone, because I have this cordless phone with a speaker built into it, and I would stick it underneath the microphone. And that's exactly what it sounds like here. It really sounds like phone line distortion. You would think that that's something that they would have dealt with before putting it into a final episode, unless they just thought, well, you know, everything else is stylized, the sound can be too. It just seems weird that nobody said, you know, maybe we ought to have some quality control on this particular set of lines. Unless Anthony Daniels was just recording once and maybe wasn't available later or something. Though him being unavailable for C-3PO seems almost impossible.
Yeah, I just kind of assumed they liked it because it did. I mean, you can tell it just because you've heard so much C-3PO before, but I kind of liked it. I thought it had an interesting sound, like made it sound muffled, kind of like in the atmosphere and the environment around it. I don't know. For some reason, it worked.
Okay, so we get to see the blatant use of force of the mind trick on Captain Typho. Voiced by
Andre Sogliuzzo, I believe, who also voiced the clones, which didn't help when a lot of younger viewers that I've shown this to have said, "What's wrong with that clone's eye?" No, it's not a clone. He sounds like it because it's the same voice actor, but no. Do all people with the same skin tone have to be clones? Huh? Racist little
But
children.
You know, that's actually not too far off because and I'm going to show my behind-the-scenes ignorance in the Star Wars universe here. The actor who plays the clones when they're younger looks a lot like Jay LaGaia.
Well, guys, don't you remember George Lucas made that mistake at C4 when Jay LaGaia was on stage with him, he goes, don't you have to go play a clone or something? I mean, he screwed that up too. Unless he was just being funny because of the fact that they look alike. I thought they did too.
Don't worry, I'm sure there's a retcon out there for that speech of his. He didn't actually
George Lucas
say that.
Is so powerful, he gets retcon of his speeches.
Exactly.
I was going to say, good luck at ever finding a copy of that.
Hey, it's like his whole thing with there was going to be one film and then 12 with A New Hope being the first and then 9 with A New Hope being fourth. And no, I always planned it to be 6th. You know, if he can retcon that, I'm sure he can retcon his words as well. Unfortunately, I'm sure his ex-wife would say, he tries. I would know that's why the original versions had to be bonus material.
Republic Forces Radio Network is in no way affiliated with LucasArts, even less so now. Lucasfilm, not LucasArts.
Actually, either of them, to be honest.
So we get to see Yoda blatantly do the mind trick here, which is a little bit corny and goofy because Padme's... I really don't think any of us thought Padme bought that this was coming straight from Typho, so she knew...
She does what was going on? She raises her eyebrow, but it's funny. It's like one of those few moments of outright hilarity in the series where it's just, I don't know, that was laugh out loud funny to me when I first saw it. It still was when I went back and watched it here. You know, it's so rare that we get to see the mind trick done in any unusual way. It worked.
Well, here's what I thought was actually funny is why are these two together? Why is Yoda on Padme's ship? They talk about a mission. They're going somewhere. Oh, you know, Ilum's on the other side of the system. I'm like, but what could they possibly be doing together? That's just, I guess it doesn't seem so weird now that we see a lot of interaction with them in the current episode. But I remember when watching this back in 04 thinking, well, what are they doing? It didn't make a lot of sense for me there. Nor do they really try to explain it well. It's just like, Yoda and Padme are together for some reason. Okay, just deal with it.
You know, but after watching the conversation between the two, when he tries to leave and she wants to come with him, and the look on Yoda's face when she throws out the pout, the kind of like, don't give me that look.
Yeah, that was funny.
You know, she could have said, I need to go get some new shoes from Naboo. And Yoda's like, oh, crap, some Jedi's got to protect you. I guess I'm going to go. The look that they animated Yoda with, it just... That was my laugh out loud moment in this episode. He's just his jaw drops and he's just like, I can't not say yes. But a Jedi, a senator, and some droids go flying across the galaxy and take absolutely no clone backup. Good call. So Yoda goes to investigate the temple and Padme goes outside in her snow bunny outfit. Now, you said we were going to talk about this because Nathan has never heard of it, and
no, it's not that I've never heard of it. I just don't get it. I mean, I've even seen people taking this and making sort of the fandom artwork of it, where they kind of take it to extremes, where it's almost like Jim Lee has been doing the artwork or something like that. But I still don't get it. I still don't get how this outfit compared to any of the other ones. I mean, she had at least one in Attack of the Clones that wasn't there, like a see-through one or an almost see-through type thing. I mean, I can understand that with an actress and slinky clothing in a film. I don't get it when it's this. I mean, I can maybe even get it if somebody could find themselves fixated maybe on a character out of the CG cartoon because there are more defined lines to the characters. But this really is like, I mean, it's kind of like somebody getting fixated to me with like Bugs Bunny when he dresses in drag. I mean, I don't get how someone could look at this and go, oh, she's sexy.
Do you ever think that Bugs Bunny was kind of sexy when he dressed up like a girl?
I don't see it. You know, I don't any more than I think anybody could look at this series and look at the way that they portray Anakin and go, boy, he's handsome. I don't see that in either the portrayal here and the artwork, but also in the costume. I mean, you take off the hood and she's got that I'm trying to be Sinead O'Connor or Asajj Ventress type of like skin cap thing going on. I mean, unless you were really hooked on Ilea from the first Star Trek film, I don't see the fascination there either. I don't get it. I don't see the fascination.
It looks like latex. It's pretty normal because when I was a kid, you know, Marvel used to come out with these swimsuit issues, right? And they'd have like Rogue and Psylocke and Mystique even in these swimsuits. And it wouldn't even be a comic book. It would just be a swimsuit issue. So it's not uncommon that, you know, us geek boys could find animation sexy.
Well, No, because, I mean, I can see that because I remember those too, but why this costume? That's what I'm saying. I mean, not why, you know, animation, but why this look? Where's the fascination with that?
I can tell you for me why I enjoy it. And I also enjoy Bugs Bunny and drag, by the way. But the reason I enjoy it, it's because it's kind of skin tight, you know, and it's, you know, when she does take the hood off, she does have that kind of futuristic Sinead O'Connor vampire kind of look to it. So it works. It's something that works. And I don't know if it's because it's skin tight, she shows a little rear, or if it's kind of the same kind of skin tight white that that Padme shows in episode 2. It kind of reminds me of that episode, of that outfit where she's showing a little rear in that too. So I can go along with it's a sexy outfit, you know, and whoever gave the name Snow Bunny, I mean, it's just, that just sealed the deal right there.
Well, let me ask the one person in the group that doesn't have perhaps the male perspective here. Or,
oh, no.
Although she did certainly get into a male perspective, because I get crap from my girlfriend from time to time, because we'll be talking, and I tend to think in terms of casting. How would you cast this role and that sort of thing? Like, if I were casting someone for one of my self-published novels, Echoes Are Greater Good, how would I cast this character? And I can recognize, without being attracted to a guy, I can recognize that's a handsome guy. I could see how people would find him attractive. That would make a good leading man type of casting call type thing here. Not speaking from a attractiveness standpoint, but Jen, from the standpoint of what a woman would think of as sexy, does this fall into that category? Because maybe I'm the only one completely oblivious here, but it really, I don't know. I don't even see how a woman would look at that and say, I'm going to dress like this because it's sexy, you know?
Honest to God, my first reaction when I first saw this was, whoever designed the suit has never been anywhere near a cold climate ever, because there's no insulation on that thing. Living through northeastern winters, it's like not going to work. But as far as like aesthetics, I don't really get it. I'm not a guy. I'm not attracted to women, so I don't really think like that. But I guess it's a skin tight cat suit. So my first thought is most guys are going to probably be picturing the human actress Padme in it, which was almost what she was in Attack of the Clones before they started shredding it. But I can see it. I don't really like it. I think it's kind of tacky, but I can deal. It's no worse than some of the other stuff they've had her in. It's definitely not worse than Slave Leia.
It bothers me when I see the characterization of Padme here, because she starts out being this take charge butt kicker. And I like seeing that in the Padme character. She got to do that in Attack of the Clones, and she's got to do that a few times in the current Clone Wars series. She didn't really get a lot of chances to do that in episode 3. Of course, she was pregnant during episode 3, so there's not a lot of action sequences that she could do. But it seems like she's very cavalier here. Like, C-3PO, why don't you walk over there and be the bait? Oh, here, let me toss this out. You can walk over there and draw out the cloaked droids, and I'm going to throw a freaking grenade at your feet. Thank goodness, apparently, C-3PO is made of sterner stuff. I mean, he's made of the stuff they must have made the glove of Darth Vader out of in the David's books, because it blows up, wipes out the droids attacking them, and just, like, slings C-3PO over into a snowbank. It just seems like she is very willing to not only put herself in danger, which seems mostly in character, but also to put C-3PO in danger here. And I'm not sure that really fits how she and Anakin kind of look at these as human-style characters, in a way. That bothered me the first time I saw it, and it still got to me a little bit seeing it this time. I love the action-oriented nature of her in this, but I don't think it fits her characterization from elsewhere.
See, I thought that actually fit her character pretty well. It's the pouty little girl trying to get her way moments that seem a lot less Padme. Padme's not that type. She's not going to play the bat her eyes at you to get her way. She's going to just do whatever the crap she wants to anyway.
Actually, one of my notes specifically was that I can't believe that she used 3PO's bait and in the grenade. I mean, Nathan, I picked up on that too. I thought that was really weird, because you would think with those two droids, even though they're cloaked, they were right on top of 3PO. I mean, how they missed him was ridiculous. I mean, he should have just been shredded up.
I guess you could make the argument, though, that his armor, like the grayish kind of armor that he had in episode 2, maybe that's just stronger stuff than what he would have had later on. I mean, we don't know exactly what Anakin used, I don't think. So maybe he was just more armored than even the battle droids themselves were, or maybe they were vulnerable from coming out of cloak, like we would say with, you know, a Star Trek vehicle or something like that. It just seemed weird.
Padme's always struck me. I feel like the writers or Lucas or somebody, like, no one's really ever defined her, because she's got these weird different, I guess, like, aspects to her character that they kind of sort of go into, but then they contradict it a little bit. Like, I feel like in this, they made her almost seem like a teenage girl, where she was kind of impulsive and doing things kind of recklessly. And she was doing that weird little pout with Yoda. And I felt like she should be more of like a mature. She's this senator. She's used to addressing thousands of people. She's supposed to be older. And she strikes me here as almost being like a kid. And maybe that's just to make her more easily accepted by the audience. But I feel like they don't really pin her down ever. I feel like she vacillates between this person who's really headstrong and is going to go do her own thing to someone who loses the will to live. So it kind of bothers me, because I want to get behind Padme, and every time I kind of start to, she does something that irritates me, and I never can quite get behind her as like I could like with Leia.
You think that maybe they were basing some of that pouty characterization on episode one? I mean, granted, episode two was out for 2 years by the time that this aired. But obviously they had a longer production process than that to figure out how they were going to handle these episodes. I think episode two was out by the time they got to that point. But you might remember there was that scene, and it always was one that kind of felt weird for the character back in episode one, where, you know, she's questioning Qui-Gon. It's that line from the trailer, right? Are you sure about this? Trusting our fate to a boy we hardly know? And then Qui-Gon just kind of brushes it off and, you know, says the queen trusts his judgment. And she goes, well, I don't approve. And she sits and pouts. It's like, it's that one moment that really makes her feel like a kid and actually fit the age the character's supposed to be in episode one. I wonder if maybe they were trying to grasp at straws for characterization for her, because they didn't have much to work with at the time. Let's bring in a little bit from episode two. Let's bring in a little bit from episode one. And maybe they thought it would come off as playful, perhaps?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that really works for Padme here.
Jen's right, though. She's definitely a character who is defined by who's around her and who she's interacting with. It's almost like they haven't given her a core. I think she's absolutely dead on with that. I never quite could put my finger on what made Padme a weird character. But yeah, she's definitely one that's defined by situations, in a sense. Even in the Clone Wars cartoon series today. I mean, when she's around Anakin versus being around Bail versus being around anybody else.
All right, so while Padme's been fiddling around, blowing up 3PO or not blowing him up, Yoda has successfully rescued the Jedi. The mission is a success, and everybody goes home happy. Whether they go on to whatever mission got derailed by this rescue, we don't know.
Well, and I kind of wish, and maybe this just would just been super boring, but I mean, we see like the middle episodes are really much focused on Yoda, kind of taking the momentum from episode two and just how amazing Yoda can be with a lightsaber when he wants to be, and zipping back and forth from all these droids and they're cloaking and coming to, and he like knows where they're at and going around. So we see a lot of action in that middle one. Then the third one is like all Padme, and suddenly he just shows up with a Jedi, and you're kind of like, you know, personally, the one note I took was, well, I kind of wish I would have seen how Yoda was able to get to him, because they were seriously buried under the rubble of this temple going down. And I don't exactly know how they were holding themselves kind of or holding everything up, because Barriss is really struggling trying to keep the boulders, and then Luminara's just meditating, and then Barriss is like, oh, I'll just meditate too, and they're still kind of holding everything up. I guess maybe there's more strength there, but part of me kind of wish we would have seen what Yoda did to get in there, because it had to have been really cool.
Well, we kind of saw the beginning of it. Once he gets there, he starts picking up rocks with the Force. I guess I just kind of figured the whole time Padme's running around in the snow, that's what he's doing, picking up rocks.
Oh, you know, I feel silly, because I'm totally drawing a blank on that. I thought the middle episode ended with him still kind of being, you know, ambushed, and just does he actually make it to the temple at the end of the middle episode here that we're talking? What would that be, 15?
Yes, the slowest 10 seconds of that episode are as he walks through the entrance of the temple. We talk about how kinetic and how fast everything in this show moves up until that point in episode 15. Then all of a sudden we are watching Yoda take every step.
But see, that I bet that was somewhat intentional, because you see that in episode two, you know, when Yoda's fighting Dooku and he's just jumping and hopping, and the Dooku takes off, and then he grabs his cane and he just starts limping. You know that's got to be a drain on Yoda to have to go in those little spurts.
I'm sure that was completely intentional, and I'm sure that was a drawback to that scene with him and Dooku.
Like Yoda's like that dude that's on workers' comp who's not working but really could be working. He could be doing more for the war effort. He's like, oh, my back. I need to walk with my cane. And as soon as everybody's not looking, hi-yah! Oh, my cane.
Well, if he did that all the time, then he'd stop getting his disability checks.
I kind of liked how 3PO had that, still had a droid's feel. Like you could see some like low level of expression on his face. And maybe I'm just so used to what we covered last season with, or what we covered last summer with droids, and I'm looking for it. But, you know, how did you guys like this take versus the 3PO that we saw in the actual droids series? Seems like he's still more agile than anything we've ever seen, certainly in the films, of course. But did he seem a little out of whack in the way he was able to get around and just kind of his face?
You know, Tartakovsky said that he designed this version of C-3PO after the droids version. So I think there.
Yeah, you said that earlier, and I had never heard that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
No, everything that just about everything C-3PO did, at least after they landed on Geonosis in Episode 2, felt unbelievable to me. So I kind of had the rails kicked out from under me as far as what C-3PO could and couldn't do. So at this point, I kind of buy anything. Maybe his face is made of rubber metal and it can express and emote.
Okay, now here's one other question I have. I never thought about this before, and I guess I really should have, because it would seem to me that, number one, we see R2-D2 and Yoda, like, face-to-face, in the same room, on the same mission, and I think I've always had in my head, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but I've always had in my head that R2-D2 and Yoda have never interacted before. But even if that was true, even if they had never been in the same room together, R2-D2 has to know, because of his involvement with Anakin, Padme, or just being around the Jedi and the Republic in this era, who Yoda is. So it kind of made me think, when we're in Empire Strikes Back, why is, and I know the answer is because that was made in 1979, but why wouldn't R2-D2 just be going nuts when he sees Yoda? It's like, hey, I know this guy, this is Yoda. Or even when Luke says to him, they're on the X-Wing, I'm looking for, does he mention him by name, or just I'm looking for a Jedi Master or something? And I know he can't speak, you know, basic, you know, something where you can understand R2, but it just seems like he would have more of a, oh, wow, that's him, I know this guy, just going nuts like he does in other places. And is this the first time we've ever seen R2 and Yoda, like, in the same room, or does it happen all the time on the Clone Wars, like with Zillow Beast episode and things like that? Maybe I'm just never thought about it before.
Yeah, I don't know how many times it's happened before or happens elsewhere. I'm sure it does happen elsewhere, but they did try to sort of answer this whole issue. With C-3PO, it was obvious, because for years they've said, well, C-3PO just got a mind wipe, so he just doesn't remember it. And then they worked that into Revenge of the Sith. Well, C-3PO just gets a mind wipe, so he doesn't remember, which begs the question, what about R2-D2? And they addressed this a few years back, actually it was right before the beginning of the Legacy of the Force novels, in a trilogy called the Dark Nest Crisis, the Dark Nest Trilogy. If you ever get a chance to read those books, don't. Definitely not some of the best Star Wars fare out there. But
would you say it's like the Dark Nest Monster? I'm sorry.
Nice. Those are sitting on my shelf for me to get to after I get to the...
some of my favorites, definitely not.
I'm so happy.
It's like Invasion of the Big Ant Creature things, but that's okay. But no, in that storyline, basically they discover these recordings, these memories, if you want to call them that, recordings, whatever, within R2-D2 that are about Anakin and Padme. Now, of course, why is it being revealed then? Well, because now in the novels you can, because we know what happens at the end of Revenge of the Sith. But the idea was that the recordings were encrypted, basically, and probably hidden away, locked away by, we're assuming, people working for Bail Organa. So probably somebody on Alderaan or somebody within the Rebellion, maybe the early Rebel Alliance or something, buried this down. And when these memories start to be unlocked, or when these recordings, whatever, start to be unlocked for them to see, R2-D2 actually recoils at the idea. He doesn't want to reveal it to Luke and Leia. They don't want to show him that because they think it's going to, R2-D2, think it's going to bring pain to his masters, in a sense. So it's a combination of R2 keeping this to himself when it's unlocked, and otherwise the memory is being locked up. Instead of doing a memory wipe, they just compartmentalized it. Whether it was maybe so that the truth could be known someday when the time was right, or what, R2 does get one of those treatments, kind of like C-3PO, to explain away why he doesn't just start spouting off everything. Because you mentioned, you know, well, he doesn't speak in words. Yeah, but he's got that little screen on the X-Wing. He very easily plug into it and have it come out as words, or say something to C-3PO and have C-3PO repeat it back for him. He could very easily have said something, unless there's a reason for him not to. And they go through a lot of hoops to finally get access to those recordings. They even go through the process of getting a prototype R2 unit to hook up so that they could get access to those encrypted memories without having the actual encryption system that was used to create it there on hand. It made for kind of an interesting side story, perhaps even more interesting than the actual Dark Nest conflict itself in those novels.
Maybe that's why C-3PO is always so irritated with R2-D2, because R2's always got this "I know something you don't know" attitude going on. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us once again for another episode of Republic Forces Radio Network, and invite everyone to come back again next week where we will discuss the next 3 episodes in the micro series, and we'll talk to you all then.
See you, Dan.
See ya.
See you later, Rockstar.
Later.
Be safe, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
So but, next week, I mean, is going to be the crystals and Snow Bunny Padme, right? Week.
No, actually, that's what we're doing next.
That's now.
Okay.
That's in 11 minutes, so you can go watch it and have 2 minutes to spare.
No, I watched it.
11 minutes.
What's happening? These are all 3 Ilum, aren't they?
Yeah. This is...
We be Ilum.
Yeah, I gave names to these at some point, so I'll have to mention those whenever we do the introduction.
You gave names to the episodes?
I gave names to them back during the commentary that I think work well.
Ah, gotcha. You know, people actually listen to that? It's amazing, yeah. Nathan. A plugged work. Has
a
anybody
plug
bought your book?
Actually worked. Exactly.
I want to thank... No, I don't want to thank anybody yet. We're not at the end of the show.
All right, see you next week, Dan. Thanks. Yeah, I just played a card in the sense that I was the only one who knew anything about Transformers among the hosts. So
that's right. And so when the My Little Pony retrospective comes up, I am golden.
And you're just Jerry on the forums now? You're just Jerry on the forums now? You're not Bounty anymore?
Yes, I actually did change the Jerry just to mix it up a little bit.
You went Jerry, and I actually just recently changed to Dan, so. Boring.
Interesting.
Nothing funny down this road. One hour, 29 minutes. Cut another Wars plug. Okay. I keyed.
Na-na-na-na.
Do-do-do-do-do. Oh, my God.
And it took you that long to get the joke, but that's okay.
No, I'm trying not to die because Barrett almost made tea come out of my nose. I
In this case, these are questions that have been asked, but not answered yet. And is Brandon Lee here? Was that the crow?
Nevermore.
That was awesome.
What was that?
That was freaky.
I see you've made your decision. Now let us.
What was that? What was that?
That was a crow.
I hear boom, 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 ding, 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 and all like the crow music and
does anybody know song what the hell the that was?
Are we being haunted?
I'm kind of freaked out that nobody knows where the crow came from, other than you know the whole you died with something. Yeah, and that not that part.
Even technically, so probably safe.
That's really weird, yo. I'm just saying, bro. It's a little creepy.
It was a little creepy. Oh, I thought Nathan was going to stop and jump in and tell me how wrong I was there.
So, are you going to complete that sentence? Or?
If Dan can edit and make himself sound smarter, I can too.
Yes, because that's what I do.
So if I don't wind up.
The show knows I edit and make myself sound
so
smarter.
So it doesn't wind up like last week's train wreck.
And kudos to Jen for throwing out the "Lost the Will to Live" line this time.
Do I get bingo?
I think quite possibly.
Do I get to sing it again? No. Okay.
No. That was horrid.
Yeah, but it was the best that we could do.
What I said. Talk about anybody else.
You weren't right. Doing your Matt Lucas impression with that ending?
Yes. That's what it was, Master. I know.
Man, I know you don't think this was a very good show, but we are capable.
Let's all say goodbye.
Before this goes horribly, horribly wrong. Oh, wait, too late.
Too late.
You wish I would have stayed quiet now, huh?
Okay. All right, we'll talk to everybody next week.
So next week, what are we?
No, you're supposed to say thank you now. Shut up, Nathan.
No, well, are we doing 21 also or just through 20?
No, you're actually supposed to record your goodbyes for this episode, and then we can talk about that.
Oh, well, you get that kind of crappy ending, and then we were just like, started talking about how crappy it was. So.
Yes. And all about what a crappy job Dan was doing for a good 10 minutes. It was wonderful. It's like I have my mom on the phone. yeah, you don't always have to say goodbye only to me. You can say goodbye to everybody.
Bye, Dan.
Goodbye.
Bye, Jen.
I'll miss me.
Bye, Barrett. See you, Nathan. Bye, John Boy.
Exactly. Here we go.